Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 22 of Bad End Podcast. I am your host, Katie McCarthy, and I'm back. I wasn't here last week because I think I was just really busy. I just was not here for work purposes, which sucks, but I'm back. The bitch is back. I have returned, and I'm joined, as always, by my two co-hosts.
Love to have the woman back.
I think you weren't here because it was guy time last week. And
I know. It's International Women's Day tomorrow, so it's probably good that I'm back to represent the ladies.
Well, this could be the Katie special. You can relay to us the women's culture in gaming, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about girl games like
Overwatch,
Call of Duty,
Candy Crush,
Kim Kardashian, Hollywood,
Balls.
I totally respect those game. As games. My name's Joshua Calixto, by the way, writer for Kotaku, have written for Rolling Stone in the past.
And I'm Kyle Cookstell. I write at Kotaku, Rolling Stone, Polygon, Unwinnable, Boing Boing.
He's naming off publications.
Paste.
I've been everywhere, honestly. I've been around the block and back. So when I say that I know video games, look me up and you can find my writing anywhere. I definitely know video games.
Kyle hasn't written for any of those publications that he just listed.
Full disclosure, Kyle's a liar.
But Kyle is going to GDC.
I am going to GDC. Not as a writer. I'm going to pitch my video game, which we won't talk about now. But
little preview.
You have to keep it fresh for the publishers.
Little preview of what's to come.
It's got to be fresh.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. I didn't know you were I totally forgot you were going to be there. I live in San Francisco, so I'm naturally just going to be at GDC. But I also have my schedule is packed. I'm already nervous. I have so many interviews lined up. I'm like, God, I'm going to go crazy.
Busy lady.
So for me, I'm a game developer. I'm going there to network with game developers and also pitch my game to publishers. But the journalist angle for GDC is always kind of strange because it feels like it's what I imagine it looks like when journalists are chasing around heads of state for quotes where you're like, hey, I know you're going to this big thing, but can you tell me about something about your talk?
What's
the journalist angle for GDC?
But also it's a bunch of PR emailing us for demos and stuff. People go there and they're like, hey, I come to this appointment and play a demo and talk to this person or whatever. Or sometimes hey, this big person's going to be here. Do you want to interview them for 30 minutes to an hour?
Okay,
sure.
That makes sense.
It's usually they set it up, but I've been chasing a lot because I'm working on a couple big features. So I'm chasing people and I'm going to be doing a big survey where I'm just going to grab people when I see them hey, answer this question for me if you want, but no pressure. I don't really care.
GDC, you guys know what GDC stands for?
Game Developers Conference.
Gosh,
I don't know.
Darn cringeworthy, am I right, guys?
Oh my god. I was wow. I realize you're going for a joke and
gosh,
I ruined
darn
it by just
what
cringeworthy.
What about God dang, Katie?
Me ruining jokes.
Good one.
That's how it goes. But yeah, I'm excited for GDC. I think it'll be I'm also going on vacation this weekend, so I'm going on vacation for 5 days, coming back, I'm going to have the biggest inbox of my life probably. I'm going to be checking my email all vacation
because
I just don't want to, back to 100 things in my inbox. I woke up to 40 emails and it freaked me out because I like to keep my inbox
zero. Just delete them
zero.
All. Fuck that.
Inbox zero is a lie. It's a myth perpetrated by people who don't have real jobs.
No,
I
keep it at zero. Mm-hmm. I wake up,
it's a bourgeois
I delete
myth.
The ones I don't need. I reply to whoever, I spend an hour to 2 hours every morning responding
Inbox Zero
to emails.
Is a Marxist dream.
I don't know. It's totally possible. I feel like it's lazy people don't maintain a zero. But also, there's people that don't get a lot of emails probably. They're I maintain a zero. I get a lot of emails, but I make sure to read through them.
I just
mark them as red if I don't care.
I just gloss over the subject lines, and if it doesn't look appealing, I just let it go. And then it's just I have
keep,
2,000. No, I have 2,000.
You don't archive it?
I have 2,000 emails in my inbox. I don't care.
You got to at least archive.
I'm a neat freak. I do bullet journals. I keep a Hobo Nietzsche planner. I'm very into making my life as organized as humanly possible.
See,
I don't know. I used to keep like a digital one on my phone too. I don't do that anymore because I'm like, it's too much. I have too much planning. I'm like planning the planning at this point. That's stupid. Why am I doing that? So now I just keep like handwritten planners, which is actually nice. I feel like I'm like way more organized than I used to be, where I was just like, I don't remember what I was supposed to do this week. Shit. But now I have all my deadlines like in a calendar and shit.
I feel like that's like the weird part about email though, is that you don't know, like you don't know where an email will like.
should we talk about video games? You don't at know. Some point?
Hold on, wait. I just want to say
no,
one thing
no,
about
we're
email.
We're talking about emails.
We're talking about
what's
emails.
The
thing
about,
game emails, about
emails.
You guys are like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Am I right? Talking about the emails a lot.
We can talk about. Actually, I can segue this real fast. So most emails you get, and I think the issue with Inbox Zero is that. A lot of emails
that
aren't like immediately
is this
actionable.
Is this a game you're pitching, Kyle?
No. Inbox Zero.
It's a Lucas Pope style joint.
Yeah, that's what exactly I was like. It's
where
like
just...
papers, please, shit.
My cat just stepped on my keyboard. No, but I think it's like some stuff is hard to be actionable. But I did get an actionable email in my inbox, which had to do with
make sure she doesn't stop your recording.
I know the fucking cat.
Yeah, I was like Napoleon.
I was.
What are you doing?
Shit. I was emailed a key. Yeah, I know. I was emailed a key from Jason Roer after I bought his game.
Wow.
To play 1 hour, one life, which is Jason Roer is the guy who did Passage and he did the Castle Doctrine a few years ago. And he's kind of like this indie game impresario to some degree. He's kind of like, I mean, in terms of like the past 30 years, he's like one of the big, like truly indie guys.
I love the
Witness.
Hasn't,
he doesn't many things that's like
really big,
you know,
fan
like.
Of- Braid.
Which one?
Braid.
He didn't make Braid, but he's done like a lot of like weird experimental video game stuff. And I think the cool stuff about his things is that like he makes a style of game that is not or wasn't picked up on in terms of like the indie game as an aesthetic zeitgeist. Like his stuff is always, it's always kind of like different, and it's not part of like common patterns of game development or like game mechanics. So his new game is super weird. I think, I remember if we talked about it or we like, we think we mentioned it, but
I saw
the
preview.
Idea is that it's a kind of like a, yeah, it's like a multiplayer game where, well, it's like massively multiplayer in terms of like, maybe you share the world with like 100 people at a time. I'm not super sure. But the idea is that you're born into the game. And then when you're born to an older player. So like literally as you're in the game, you get older and older and older, and at a certain age, like someone who just joins the game and starts will spawn in the game as a baby. And then the whole point of the game is basically to get as old as possible before dying. And you could die super fast because there's a whole starvation mechanic where you have to just eat. And so if you're a baby, you can't actually pick stuff up to eat, so you have to rely on somebody else to feed you. And also when you're young, you can type out sentences to talk to people, but the younger you are, the less you can actually type. So when you're a baby, you can like only type a single letter, but as you get older, you can start typing in words and sentences. So it builds
that's
up
really
this like
interesting.
Yeah, it's so crazy. So it builds up this whole like dependency of you needing to rely on other players, like both mechanically and from like a communication standpoint. And there's so much stuff that's super interesting about this game. Like there's like all these emergent social dynamics of players that are playing because you have this limited skill set and everybody has like very real constraints. So you have people coming up with really, really interesting ways to solve problems. Like specifically, people will go around and if a baby spawns, they'll be like, "Oh, press H to say you're hungry because you can't talk otherwise." So if you're a baby, you'll press H a lot so somebody can feed you. And then you have people that are running around as like nomads and shit, trying to find other people to like make civilizations with, and like ostensibly you can like build a computer and like make a whole crazy future world, but so far people, when I was playing, have only made like baskets and like charred fish. So it's really exciting. Like I'm super excited to watch this game grow.
Are there any boss babies in this world?
Dude, I watched Boss Baby this past weekend.
Oh hell yeah!
It was fucking great. I was so surprised.
What?
That's not the answer
that
I was expecting.
That is definitely.
I
yeah,
tried
dude,
watching
maybe
it
was
and
the
like,
answer
I
was expecting
hate this?
From Kyle.
It's like as bad as it looks. Or
I mean,
like,
it's like definitely, it's
it.
As stupid as it looks, but
it's
also
so
like.
Stupid. It's like
there's some good shit in there. But yeah, so this
I did laugh like once. I was Jason Rohr is
a legend. Like Kyle, he said Impresario, but this dude, I remember like Passage was like the game that people would talk about back in the day. Like before Shadow of the Colossus was a thing and stuff, people were like, Passage's games is art. Like, I think it was before it, wasn't it? Anyway, this shit was like off the rails, off the chain. Jason Rohr is a legend. This game looks hot. This game looks really... I like how the art style is like different from what he's usually done.
Yeah, it's like hand-drawn. Kind of, it's like kind really like crude cutesy, hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, and they have to make it like a cute aesthetic because there's like dead infants in it and shit like that, right? Like, what happens when you die as a baby? It just...
You turn into bones. So I think the animation's super basic, but I think the animation and like the style is done as an efficiency, not because of like the subject matter, which is like... I mean, it's I know it's kind of like grotesque in one way because it's just babies dying a lot. But specifically, there's like a ton of fucking items, and there's like all these crazy, basically like crafting dependencies. So like, you have to get a small stone and put it on a rock to then make it like a sharp stone, and then that sharp stone gets used with reeds to make like a bundle of reeds. And so everything, like no objects are actually animated. It's all just like individual images, so the style I think is done to allow him to like really quickly iterate and like add more and more and more stuff to the game. It's crazy. It's super complex. I love it as like an idea of like a social experiment as much as a game itself, where it's like it's beautifully suited for kind of like the moment of streaming and Twitch stuff, because it's all about people playing and kind of responding to scenarios that are around them, as well as figuring out ways to effectively communicate at different levels of people. So it's this huge, like, kind of social weird melting pot that makes it. I mean, it's fun to play. So it's like some weirdness, but it's also just super interesting to watch, and watch how people interact with each other and like kind of watch how hierarchies form.
Also, it seems you have like, things. It seems like the emergence is built right in, right? Because
from the start,
like if you have an hour to live. And then you die and you start over as a baby, you obviously can't do any, you can't like keep working on the Stone Age technology you were working on at the same level. Like you kind of need someone else to pick it up for you. But is it like that coordinated where people are working together?
No.
Oh, I was doing this thing before.
No. So the world is like super massive. So if you die, you'll spawn somewhere, and it's not guaranteed at all. I don't think it ever happened to me. And I played like 30 lives. Like you don't spawn where you just died. So it's like you'll die and then you'll be spawned to a totally different family somewhere else. So you could have like worked for like, you know, 45 minutes building up some civilization or like a house or something, and then like you run out of berries or your food crop doesn't properly happen and you die, and then you just get spawned somewhere else as a baby, and someone might like run across the thing that you built and try to pick it up, but there's no guarantee that you're going to be born into the same family again. So you have all this like, it's all about like permeance and transience and like life and death and this like kind of cycle. It's so interesting. I love this kind of idea of treating games as like a melting pot of like mechanics and like sociology and psychology kind of all blending together. It's like really beautiful.
Wouldn't it be cool if we found like new economic systems through this game? That'd be cool.
I think one thing that is interesting is to like...
In my like opinion. Bitcoin?
No, like communism or capitalism.
I'm just like making dumbass jokes.
No, it's okay.
I think
this is what you missed last week. You missed just making light of
I don't think we missed any... Boy talk. I don't think we're missing out on any dumbass jokes last week, I gotta say.
That's actually true, yeah. I did listen.
We had our share.
I mean, you do have, like, it is interesting because you have the, like, you die if your starvation meter gets to the bottom. I think people can kill each other, too, but I haven't seen that happen. But what it does do is that, the nature of human civilization is kind of remediated in some ways, because you have the idea where you're like, oh, I need food to survive. So everybody kind of generally, at the start right now, at least, like, adapts, like, a hunter-gatherer lifestyle where people build baskets and go out and like gather berries and put them in baskets and bring them back together. And that's not because the game says you have to do that. It's just like, if you're playing with other people and everybody has to survive off of like eating enough food, you're then like, oh, well, like if I find more people, we can cover a larger distance and we can stockpile our resources and have like a better chance at survival together. But also you're like, oh, now I see how some of this, the splinters happen, because if you get to a society of a certain size, you start having like running out of mouths, like running out of food to feed all the mouths in the society. So you've got to figure out more sustainable forms of agriculture. So all that stuff happens in the game, and it's crazy just to watch it and play it, and be a part of it. What I don't know is like how big the world is, and how much it's able to stack up on itself. So like right now it's very like hunter gatherer type stuff, but I imagine like if people are playing kind of over time, slowly the all tides will rise or something, to kind of like slowly bring in new eras of like the game. So right now it's like Neolithic, and then over time, like most people will have like built some sort of stone shelter and you'll be born into that. So I imagine between now and like a year from now, the general state of the game will be different, which is like super appealing and crazy.
It's interesting though, because in the context of this game, it can only progress along the lines that have been built for it. You know what I'm saying? Like in real life, you know, if you discover like smoking weed or something, or like making, you know, making charred fish, or learning how to like do cuisine dishes or something like that, like there's an infinite amount of possibilities, it seems. Whereas in this game, it's like you can kind of only follow what Jason Rohr has built within the context of this game, which is like a kind of interesting, like it's built for emergence, but at the same time, there's only so many possibilities. Like there's so many assets that he's making and so many paths for you to take, that it's like, I wonder how much room for flexibility and actually like forwarding the society outside of like his intended way of doing it there will be, you know? So he's probably already thinking like, well, how are they going to get to the next phase of society? Well, it's by like living as hunter gatherers, and then they will discover the next step, which is like something he made, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like an interesting, kind of weird way to set it up.
It's like a historiography of saying like, this is how I think that human society developed. And like, you'll, because people aren't actually using the tools yet, you're going to, like your best model for like how people go from, you know, wooden sticks to swords is like how humanity goes from wooden sticks to swords. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, I mean, maybe I get the sense that like the game is released, but I don't know how much of the content is in, but you get the sense that like maybe he's just going to add a ton of stuff and kind of have it be a dialogue between both the players and himself, where if players are like doing this specific emergent thing, like maybe he'll like let the game be pushed more in that area. So it's like if people are fighting a lot more than they're like, you know, hunter gathering, maybe they'll like flesh out some of the ideas around like fighting and potentially offer like alternatives to that sort of encounter. I'm still super excited to see like both what Jason Rohrer thinks history is made out of, as well as like what the players do with the tool sets that he gives them.
I'm surprised it hasn't gotten that much coverage from what I have seen.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he is like an outsider to some degree. He's like not like a Twitter famous indie developer, you know. He's basically like an institutional kind of person. It's almost like academic in a way, where I think a lot of his work gets passed over because it's not sexy. Like it's not zeitgeisty. I suspect that what happened is that this game will get big on Twitch in like a month, and then we'll see a lot of coverage of it. But for now, it's like, it's so early.
Or you'll see like, there'll be like a couple stories about like how they just discovered, stone.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be like EVE Online.
Some story about that.
There's already like a few good like, Imgur, like, photo essays where people talk about like, oh man, I got old with this guy and we lived our whole life together, and like he died before me and I took his clothes, and then someone came along and gave me a lot more food so I lived longer, and then I died like 30 minutes later, but I was wearing his clothes and I thought of my friend the whole time. Like, Jesus. That stuff already exists.
Yeah.
So I think that stuff is going to continue to spread and totally be a thing.
I live for that shit.
Yeah, and I like
cover
that
this game, then.
Or die for it.
I like that it's not like, I feel like to have emergence, there's always like a sense that you have to have a lot of time. You have to invest a lot of time into a game, like in EVE. Like, if you want to be part of these, like, massive economies, you have to, like, just be playing all day long.
You have to like, have live in Eve, yeah.
But it's, like, it's cool that you could just, like, pop in for a couple hours and see where the game is and, like, contribute some sort of progress just by, like, talking with the people around you and being like, oh, I'm part of the society. I'm contributing to it and it's progress.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think, it's a totally different model for what that sort of emergence looks like. Yeah. And I mean, it should also be emphasized that when you can die super fast, like you can live and die like 5 times in the course of like 2 minutes, because if you can just spawn as a baby and like the mom that's supposed to protect you just runs away, you can't feed yourself and you'll just die, and then you'll just be spawned, and then you'll like have to spawn again. So the game can be super brutal, but I think there's also like when you find a good little settlement, it's really fun to run around.
Do you take care of your babies, Kyle? Or
did you ditch them? Totally. I take care of all my babies. One funny thing that happens is like if there's a smallish community, people just start bitching about having like a ton of babies because babies just keep spawning, and they're like, it's like there's not enough food.
They should need to just make nurseries and just throw a bunch of food in there.
Overpopulation in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, so it's, all this stuff is in this game. And it gets so much mileage out of some like very simple like looks and aesthetics and like very kind of simple mechanics. It's super interesting.
Katie, you played like a lot of games, am I right?
So every day of my life.
Katie's been gaming.
I've been gaming, like G-A-M-I-N-G. Don't forget that
Katie is the most hardcore gamer out of this whole podcast.
Unfortunately. But yeah,
by some measures.
I've been working on like this other big thing. I've sent so many emails this past week. I'm going crazy. But in between all those emails, I've been writing or playing some games. My mind's all scattered. But I think, I missed last week, so I don't want to just like bog down this podcast just recounting everything I've played in the last like few weeks.
What are you feeling strongly about?
I guess I'm feeling strongly about Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, which I reviewed for usgamer.net, the site I write for. You can find that review over on the site. I went up last week. I think it released last Wednesday? Maybe the Wednesday before, actually. I don't remember when. It was a couple weeks ago. But yeah, it's a game that released. It's from Dimbulb Games, from the main programmer / co-founder behind Fulbright, which I think is funny because it's like the opposite.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
So he's like got together a gigantic team. Like there are so many writers on this game. And basically the big crux behind the game is you're a person set off in like Great Depression era America, so like 1930s, and your goal is to collect stories. Like this wolf man that is voiced by Sting, like the Sting, tells you like, yo, like go collect these stories across America.
Love Sting.
Like you, right? I love Sting. It got me really. I listened to a lot of the Police, like after.
Hell yeah!
Because I was like, you know band. What? Great band. I forgot how much I love the Police and Sting, like by extension, but mostly the Police. Like the Police have some fucking jams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, back to the game. The problem is it's just like very boring. It's like so boring, and it sucks because it has like this really amazing concept. Like I love the idea of like a game that really is about folklore, and you're walking across the United States, but like just walking and transportation is so finicky and slow and buggy. There was one time where I was in Kansas, and then the game glitched out, and I was, like, in Maine, which is, like, so far.
Like,
it was, like, where the game starts you, and I was, like, I have no idea how that just glitched out and happened, but it didn't, like, rewind my progress.
Did you say that you weren't in Kansas anymore?
yeah, actually. Oh, I thought that. I was going to put that in my review, and I was, like, it's so corny. I'm not going to fucking do that. But, yeah, like, the game, like, is so glitchy and buggy. I'm sure it's been patched out. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were, like, oh, no, like, it's buggy. But I don't know, it's just, like, getting anywhere is such a fucking chore. It's, like, walking is, like, the slowest thing ever. If you whistle, you slightly walk faster, but not really. Like, you're still walking very slow. And your goal is basically, there's these little low-poly houses on this, like, flat map that is literally the entire United States. And you go in, you walk up to it, and you press, like, interact with it or whatever. And you get, like, a nice little, like, twine, like, bite-sized twine, like, story out of it. And those are like the, I think, the highlight of it, because I think they're all, or for the most part, like some are just like whatever, but the ones that are like really impactful, and there's like 200 something of them, are like really good and really interesting, and they're all super different. Like there's like scary stories, and there's like weird sad stories that turn into scary stories as they grow in like over time, because as you collect these stories, you tell them to other people, and then they tell it to other people. So sometimes you'll like happen upon another conversation from like these like low poly houses you find across the country, and it's like, oh, you're eavesdropping, or like you're in a saloon and you hear randomly these people are telling a story, and it sounds really familiar because it's the story you experienced, and but it's like wildly different. And the act of like stories growing is a really interesting thing, because you don't really have a hand in it. It's more like, oh, you heard it once, and then the next time you hear it somewhere across the United States, it's totally different. And I think that aspect of it's really cool. But man, just transportation really kills it. It's like, I can hop on a train, but if I'm hopping on a random train, there's a chance I'll get beaten up, and then I get booted. I'll die from that, and I'll get booted back to the last city I was in, and that could be like a long ass time ago. You can walk everywhere, and that's just like a nightmare because it's so slow. You can hitchhike, but half the time the cars just pass you by and don't care. And it's like,
how long does it take to get from place to place?
So long. Like, you could, okay, I'm trying to like, it took me 14 hours in total to meet. So there's travelers you meet at fire or campfires across the country. And they have different chapters, and like basically how those progress is kind of boring, because it's like at first it's kind of cool. It's like the guy will, like some guy will be telling you about his life story, and then he'll be like, I want to hear something funny. Tell me a funny story. So you go through your like arsenal basically of like stories, and you're like, okay, this one's funny. I'm going to tell this guy this funny story. But like the like fifth time you're doing that, and then you're doing that dozens and dozens of times, it gets, you kind of like have your like go-to picks, like, okay, I'm just gonna pick this story because this is the funny one. I know this will work because I know this person, this is the funny story. So it's kind of like the stories kind of find themselves like categorizing these really arbitrary things, because there's sometimes where they feel like they could go in multiple categories, like, oh, this is a tragic story when I thought it was scary, but okay, I just wasted that. And it, I don't know, it's just like feels like it's needlessly gamifying the experience, when it could have, I feel like it just could have been like a straight up Twine game where there's choices you make while you're like talking to these people, and it would have been a way better experience for it. But they just like have to make the, oh, you're collecting these stories for a reason, here's the reason, but it's just like you're getting more out of these people you're talking to at a campfire. I don't think any of this makes sense. It's really hard to like describe this game.
I mean, it sounds a lot like, I remember like when we were talking about Cuphead, where it feels like they had like, like there's the core element that drove the development of Cuphead, which was like this beautiful animation. And then it seems like they like did that, and they just headlong into that. And then a year and a half, or like half a year before it came out, they're like, oh, let's put some gameplay to this. And it seems like looking at the cast of like Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, it's almost like they cast a ton of writers first, and they're like, we're going to have all these stories. And then they're like, oh, we also need some sort of game around these stories. What's a video game? There was this really good podcast recently where Soren Johnson, who made Offworld Trading Company, was interviewing Chris Hecker, who like designed the creature creator of Spore and like is working on Spy Party now. And they were talking about like kind of like non-traditional like things as mechanics, and they were talking about this notion of like, I think it was like diplomacy or something, but specifically how like when diplomacy is in a game, oftentimes like diplomacy takes place in a game through the same sort of mechanics as like fighting or something, where it's like, oh, I'm trading you my like my good point card, and from my like good point you'll pass me your like concede, and therefore I win our diplomatic struggle. And it sounds similar to this, where it was like there's this like idea of story, but like story as inventory item, or like story as story-esque thing that is it's like it's not innately a story in the like in the context of how you're interacting with it. It's more just like it's literally just like an item that you carry. It's like a
currency.
Yeah. So it's weird that it sounds like it could be better. I mean, obviously it sounds like interesting, it's super cool that this game exists, but at the same time it's like, why'd you gotta go and like game it up a little bit like this? Why couldn't you figure out like a more elegant way to present a lot of this kind of disparate narrative stuff?
I think that's like the biggest problem is like it's just kind of feels like so yeah it's a bummer because I feel like the writing in it, like especially the like bite-sized little things you discover, like I feel like some of the characters didn't really hit in the way, and those are the ones that are they have literally like an author title card when you meet them at campfires, like oh this one's written by Leah Alexander, and it's like okay, like they
dude that would take me out of it so hard, like
yeah it did, and it honestly did take me out of it because I feel like I was so immersed in like this world, and like because the bite-sized stories you find across like the map, like those don't have author titles, and I know those were all different writers because they like how I learned about this game is like a bunch of interactive fiction writers that like were like contributing writing to this game, so I was like really excited about it, and then I was like oh I didn't know these like game critics did too, that's kind of weird. And it felt like I was worried the game would feel like a lot of like different cooks, like too many cooks in the kitchen type thing, like too many different voices. And I'm actually pleased with the end result. Like, I feel like the characters, they feel like they have their own voices, but it doesn't feel like they're out of place in the game. But the title card, I don't know, like just like having an author title, it felt so like that's what credits are for. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, there's been
Hideo
some like
Kojima. I don't need to see like.
Right. There's been some like weird stuff on Twitter where like I'll see people be like just trying to explain like why something is written a certain way, like by like hopping in someone's mentions and being like oh that was like actually a randomized scene, like we weren't trying to make any specific message with that scene, or just things like that where they'll like
oh like that San Francisco thing
yeah on Chris Priestman's thing, someone who worked on the game like commented on it and I was like that was not the intention, lol, or something like that.
Yeah, but it still happened, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like every time you go into a city, you have like you can like make money because you have to like survive. So it's like you have like a health meter, which barely goes down. It's more like, and you have to sleep.
What?
It's like not.
Why is there a health meter?
It's honestly not even like it's hardly a thing.
This sounds
like
but then why have it be a thing? It's like why?
It's more like sometimes random events, like oh you got roughed up a little bit or something. It's like little things, and it's like you just buy food. I don't know. Yeah, but those almost feel kind of dumb too. But they're not that bad. They don't get in the way of anything. Honestly,
this
like,
sounds like
I never died from hunger.
It should have been 80 days.
That's exactly what I was I was thinking of 80 days a lot while playing. I was like, this should have just been like an interactive choose your own adventure game. Like it would have been so good. But they want I know
80
they
days
wanted
owns,
to like really
dude. I need to play that game again.
80 days kicks ass.
80 love days does game. Kick ass. And like all the sorcery games are fucking great.
Yeah,
I haven't played those.
I
should.
I feel like they really wanted to communicate the idea of sharing folk tales and like folklore, but they did not do it
package
well.
It
sounds like exasperating. Like I don't want to play like 14 hours
so
a game to
long.
Go find like a cool story.
And yeah. I was like, I was being thorough. Like I'm sure you could probably beat it faster. Like I was like, I want to try and find every story. So I found like all the little baby stories, and I befriended everyone. But it's like,
you're so dedicated, Katie.
I'm a reviewer,
it's
dude.
It's inspiring.
I have to see. And I actually, like, the stuff that I was really into was the smaller stuff. So it was like, that was the stuff I was seeking out because that was what I enjoyed the most. Like, I want to hear, like, more of these weird ass stories. Like, there is one that really stuck with me where it's like the super weird thing where this woman was, like, holding a toddler, apparently. Like, there's a little illustration too, but someone was holding a toddler and the woman was just, like, mean and not, like, saying anything. And the toddler was, like, speaking at me. And like a grown voice, I think, or something. And was like demanding a toll, like if I was gonna pass. Like it was basically like a troll, but it was like a little baby toddler. And I was like, what the hell? And they gave me an option to be like, no way, or like be like what's up?
Pay the man.
Yeah. And then so basically how the story ends is the mom like throws the toddler at me after the toddler like is really mean to me. And then the toddler like shatters on the ground like porcelain. And it's such a like weird thing. I was like, I want like that stuff's like the coolest stuff where it's just like that was a fucking weird ass story.
That's the plot of Boss Baby. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's basically Boss Baby.
That sounds dope.
But yeah, like I don't know, like there.
That's like some 80 days shit.
Another thing is that it's not easy to go back to the stories. Like there's no like appendix where you can like scroll through and be like, oh, I'm gonna read the story and read how it changed over time as more people told it or whatever. There's none of that. You just get like one sentence. So there's a lot of times where I'm like, I don't remember what the fuck the story was. Like, I don't know what happened in California here, or I don't know what happened. There's like a bunch of like these lounge singers. I'm like, I don't remember any lounge singer. I don't know what these stories are. So it's just like, that's like kind of a bummer. I wish there was a way to like go back and like see, and to see how a story grew. Cause it's like, I don't remember, especially when there's 200 plus stories and a bunch of individual characters I'm getting to know, like I'm not gonna remember everything. Like I have horrible reading comprehension apparently, as I learned while playing this game. Like
it you was... need that like Mass Effect codex shit.
I need like something to just jog my memory, just to like look at, read a little bit about and be like, oh yeah, that's it. But there is none of that. There's just like one sentence and it's super basic, and they kind of get more like extravagant as they get retold, but then there's times I'm like, I don't remember where the story is even started. Like I know this bootlegger lady or whatever. Like, it was just like, so yeah.
It sounds like it would have been like a super dope, like choose your own adventure book too.
It would have been so dope. It's like, has the coolest idea. It has really good writing in it. Like for the most part, there's some that's like, but you know, for the most part, it's really good. But man, like as a video game, it's just not, it doesn't come together. And it was such a disappointment to play because I was really looking forward to it. And then playing it, I was like, oh no, this isn't great.
It's a bummer. I've been playing a game that was not like a bummer.
Whoa.
In fact, quite the opposite.
Some good news. Some good
news. Called a, what's the opposite of a bummer?
It's a dope.
Were you hyped for it, Josh?
Dope dank shit.
A doper?
A doper. Sorry for using that word dank again. But it's Slay the Spire, guys. I'm like, who swept me off my feet? Like, it's like Hearthstone Dungeon Run, which I fell in love with right off the bat, but as a video
game. So it's like Hearthstone.
No,
it's like, well, Dungeon Run. Dungeon Run's like the roguelike.
Yeah,
mode,
it's
right?
A roguelike, yeah. Card-based roguelike. But it's just awesome. I just love the absolute crap out of this. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just so smooth. It's like so easy to just like get lost in it. All like the ways
based off what? What's like the, paint the picture for me a little bit, because you say a card based dungeon runner and I'm like, what does that even mean?
Okay, so you start out,
what's up?
You got a dungeon map, right? You got like different rooms, and it like goes from bottom to top. So each like there's different stories, and you can different floors, I should say, and you could like choose a path through the dungeon, and there's different encounters. Like you can either run into like a fight, like combat. You can do where you, it's like an encounter that's like a scripted thing where it's like you uncover an item or some shit like that. Or you'll like might get some sort of negative effect. But it's like non-combat, but can it affect your character? And then there's like elite characters that you can fight against. There's shops, and then there's like the boss of the floor, and there's like three acts. So you try to get through all three acts and then you win. Yeah, so you kind of like plan your way through the dungeon, which is like part of it, is like strategizing, okay, well, I want to fight a lot of difficult monsters just because they'll drop better loot. Or maybe like you're low on health, so you want to have like, you want to choose a little bit of an easier path. And then combat comes and it's really simple. It's like you have cards that just says deal 6 damage and you drag it onto the enemy that, and it has like 30 health, so you have to use like a certain amount of those cards to kill it. But you also see like above their head that what they're gonna do on their turn. Like, so it'll say like this enemy is planning on dealing 6 damage to you, so you can like block damage, like block 6 damage. So it's like very, very simple combat system. You get it like the first shot, and then there's like some spells that will do things. There's like different mechanics, but the depth of how this stuff works is just so awesome, because after every fight, you can add a new card to your deck. So you try to like, depending on like what cards you get and what kind of deck you're trying to build, you kind of like go through the dungeon and start like getting more power and more power, but like also kind of making decisions that are going to like help you in the future. So it's got this like deck building aspect, along with this just like really satisfying combat system that feels just more like a turn-based RPG than like a card game, I would say. It's just that you have like different abilities that you can use on every turn depending on what you draw, right? So yeah, it's just, it hits like all of my sweet spots. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it just does everything right. The art is not, my biggest criticism of the game is that the art is kind of like Kickstarter core.
Oh no.
It's
that's
not
the worst core there is.
It's not that bad, honestly. Like, it's like, it's fine. It's serviceable. It's not ugly, I would say. But it's not great. It's not great. And there's like minimal animations and stuff, but they're adding to it. It's still like early access technically, but I'm just loving the crap out of it.
I think I saw it on Steam when I was prowling for like games to cover or whatever. And I think it's like a digital card game. Probably not my thing.
It's like a hot boy right now. I know that's like Rock Paper Shotgun is like all about this game.
Yeah.
I don't get like, what is the, I mean, I understand the appeal, but like what, like why the card metaphor for this? Like what's like, what is the, like,
is, like,
I mean,
is there a specific reason why it's cards?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, did you ever, like, I remember playing, like, there was that game Card Hunter that's still out, I think. It's, like, still being updated. But it was, like, kind of like, the idea was that you're playing a D&D campaign, kind of. But your characters had cards that were, like, items and stuff. So the whole, like, metaphor of the game was, like, pen and paper and pencil. So it, like, kind of makes sense. But for this, it seems like, it just seems like a, it reminds me of like Phantasy Star Online episode 3 or something, where the cards are just a metaphor for like disposable skills. Is that like, or is it getting something else from the idea of like cards as the mechanic?
No, there's no like real meta explanation for why it's cards over like options on a screen that say attack, magic, items, whatever. But I think just as, I think it's just conducive to like this kind of roguelike strategy game, where dungeon running is inherently, it's a genre, to me at least, it's a genre that's about like loot, right? It's a genre about like adding to your arsenal, switching up strategies on the fly based on what you have this run. And it's very like dependent on making decisions and playing optimally based on the things that you get that run. So like in Spelunky, if a certain item spawns, I'm going to play differently than if a different item spawns, right? Like if the pickaxe spawns, I'm going to try to get to the last door as quickly as possible while avoiding enemies, because I can like break through the bricks, right? Like break through the walls. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Spelunky, but I love that game. Like it's one of my favorite games. It's a roguelike. Similar thing where depending on what loot you're picking up, you're going to act differently. And I think at its core, card games also are also like very much about having situational, the ability to respond in different situations because of the fact that like you're drawing different cards every time, right? And you're trying to, when you're making a deck, you want it to be consistent. So like if I have a deck that employs a specific strategy and I don't draw it in my first hand, I'm kind of fucking myself over. So you want to have like an all-around good deck that maybe has a couple like cornerstone strategies, stuff like that. So I just think that the card genre itself, the way that that game is those types of games are played, is just very conducive to like a roguelike environment. And it feels like every time you get loot, it just like adds to your deck in a very like intuitive and natural way. And like they both complement each other in a really awesome way.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I'm presenting this to the wrong crowd. Cause you guys just, you guys both don't like card games.
No. I like card games. it reminds me a lot of, like it's kind of sounds a little bit like Rogue Legacy, but with cards and like not real time, obviously. There's a mobile game that came out recently called Meteor Fall, which is actually it looks pretty dope. It's a lot like the Tiny Touch Tales stuff that we've talked about in this podcast, but it's you basically play. It's very similar actually to what it sounds like you're describing, where instead of like going through a castle, you're going through different areas and kind of like a fantasy map. And as you go to a different area, you'll like do an encounter and you get to choose like if you want to fight something or like pick the treasure. And if you fight something, you get a card. And if you open up the treasure chest, you can also choose between different cards. And so as you're playing, like you're getting stronger by nature of the fact that you're gathering new cards into your hand. So it allows you to approach individual encounters like differently depending on what cards you have, because you can also burn stuff. I don't know if in Slay the Spire the cards like disappear after you use them, but in Meteor Fall they stay with you, so you're kind of like you level up by basically replacing shitty cards with better cards, which was like kind of cool.
Yeah, that's kind of similar to this game. There's some cards that when you use it will disappear from your deck for the rest of that combat, but for the most part they just get reshuffled into your deck, or else you would just run out of cards, which would not be very fun.
Sure.
But no, yeah, that's very similar. I mean, I've played like Card Thief, Card Crawl. Those are similar mechanically to what this game is like. I just think Slay the Spire just like feels really balanced, and like the card interactions I just find really interesting, and like it feels like you're just doing new stuff, and then there's always stuff to explore and discovery, which to me is the part about roguelikes that I like the most. And like there's different classes in this game, which is really awesome. Like, and well, there's only like three classes, I think. I only have two of them so far, but they both play like insanely differently. It's like they both use different cards. They both have different strengths and weaknesses, and like learning to play as the different classes is like totally changing up how you think about the game. It's like really awesome. But
do you play as a party or as a single person?
Single person. But yeah, I feel like this is gonna be one of my favorite games this year. Like, it's just so
damn.
It's so good, man. Like, and you just gotta play it. It's a fun, good game. I don't really know. There's not much to be said about it. It's just well designed. It's hard to say more about a game like that these days, I feel. Because like now the conversation about a game just like it encompasses so many things, and whether like the writing is good and whether, you know, the art's good and stuff like that. But this is just like a solid, well designed, just good ass roguelike card game. And sometimes I think that's enough, and that's what I dig about this game.
That's tight.
Yeah, sounds tight.
Yeah, you guys sound really
I mean, enthused. I was really into Gwent for like 3 months, so I get it.
I've been playing like a lot of card games recently, so I'm interested, but I definitely like saw the art. I saw like the idea of the mechanics, and I was like, I'll pass over this one. I'm not sure if this one's for me.
It's like it's got that board game type thing where, you know, if you've ever played just like one of these big ass board games like Arkham Horror, or even like Betrayal at House on the Hill, I know that game has like a not great reputation, but part of the fun is like kind of discovering the encounters and how the card, like how the, you know, different parts of the game interact with one another. And this game is just like full of that. You know what I'm saying? Like where it's, there's always something to be discovered and some like cool new thing that you can do with a new card, and you're like, oh, that's an awesome card, and you'll buy it and add it to your deck. And I don't know, it's solid. It's good shit.
I got another game that's just solid.
Was it? I think I know this what it little, is.
They got this little game that came out last week by the creators of the
Faster very, Than Light.
Very popular, I was wondering this would come up, actually.
Very popular, famous FTL. They have made their new game.
Which is another roguelike.
Not a rogue. Well, it is a roguelike. Another roguelike called Into the Breach, which is, it's kind of weird. Like, I've been reading a lot of interviews and like talks with those guys. It's just two guys. And they seemed like they were really dodged by like the sophomoric record curse, where they knew that FTL was like so big and like so popular and like genre defining in a lot of different ways, that they were like, there's like, fuck, this is going to be really hard to make a follow up to this game. That's like, there's just no way it's going to be as big as FTL. And I would agree with that. But so, I mean, I say that because they basically, I feel like they announced it like 6 months ago, and then it came out last week. Like, it wasn't like a big turnaround. And FTL came out like 2012, maybe, so it's been like
it was a while ago,
like and they said they've been working on it for like 3 years or something, like 3 or 4 years, so it's been it's like been cooking for a long time. And I think that they were kind of like remiss, it sounds like, to basically put anything out about it until they felt like super confident about it, which turns out like was about 6 months ago. So Into the Breach is basically, you can kind of think of it like chess. It's played on an 8x8 board, and the idea is that you have you control three mechs, and you're fighting against basically kaiju, so like giant monsters, and you're trying to defend these like cities on the board. You have like some amount of power out of like 10, and if the city gets destroyed, you lose a power, and if you lose all your power, you die and you start over. So yeah, it's like a roguelike again.
But it's like tiles, it's like Fire Emblem.
Yeah, it's like turn-based
front mission type.
Yeah.
Tactics. So
the weird thing about this game is that it's like, it's tight. I don't know if it's like well designed, but like what's interesting about it is, and actually in a Spelunky type way, you have a lot of these like discrete things that can happen. And then those elements, like through the interactions of different systems, will like breed new interesting outcomes. So like you can have there's like some attacks where you can attack a tile and it like pushes a unit one tile in a different direction. And then, oh, and you know, if that unit bumps into another unit, that unit might take damage. And then, oh, if there's some other thing on the board which makes units that die explode, like that guy took just enough damage to explode, which then causes like a chain reaction of other stuff. So each game is like basically looking, you have like a very limited set, like you have three mechs total in any given match. And you can fight up to like, I don't know, like 20 or something monsters maybe. So if you just directly take on every monster, like you're going to lose. So it's all about kind of finding like the optimal way to play in a given turn to figure out like, oh, how can I use my units to like properly manipulate the map to a state which makes it really easy to like take stuff out. And you do that by like, you start out with like a pretty basic set of mechs. There's like an artillery, like tank, and like a melee unit. But like as you play more, you start getting like way weirder shit. So like I just got one that's got like a grappling hook and like an artillery that shoots a rock that blocks a tile, and one that's got like a laser beam that attacks anything that's connected. And like using those sort of like mechanics, you can like start doing interesting stuff. It's cool, and it's not weird, but it's like, I think it's kind of like Slay the Spire in the sense where it's like, and that's it. It's like, it's really well designed. The story is like about as bad as FTL's was. It lacks flavor. It's basically mechs versus monsters. There's some sort of like framing that has to do with time travelers. That's like, not really, it's like pretty opaque and doesn't actually affect the story very much. There's like a small XCOM like mechanic where you can carry over pilots between mechs between missions, but like other than that, it's like you got these mechs, there's a lot of really interesting design, and then you just play it. And I think FTL was kind of similar. It was just like really solid design that is really fun to just interact with and kind of watch emergent things happen. But it's not trying to do more than that. And I think that, like, I mean, you look at what the game is, and like, it's pretty fucking slim in terms of like what you can do in a given match. There's four islands, and each island has like four places you can fight on. So that's like a max of like 16 encounters, and then you like win. You can like unlock more stuff, but you're still doing the same kind of sequence of like going across islands. And yeah, it's strange. I don't know.
Do you think it's enough for, because I feel like this is something that's unique to like the roguelike genre, right? That can get away with like just being a good game because like there's so many possibilities like that. Like it doesn't have to have a solid story because it's just all about like discovering these interactions and fucking around with this stuff. Do you think that's enough? Like, is this a, do you think that like people want more now? Is this going to be like a dying breed? I think like, I mean, obviously Slay the Spire had appeal. Like there's a ton of streamers that like this thing got big on Twitch for a while. It's selling really well. But for you guys, like, do you like want more out of your games at this point in your life?
I don't really care. I like a good short thing. I haven't played Into the Breach, like, for what it's worth, because I didn't like FTL. Like, it never clicked with me. I don't think it was like a bad game or anything. It just like never hit me, I guess. But Into the Breach looks like, I feel like I keep seeing people comparing it to Chess, and I feel like that makes me more want to play it, but I think I might just wait a little bit until I don't have anything else to play for work. I don't want to like cram it into like my already busy schedule. But I do want to check it out. But yeah, I don't know. I appreciate a good, tightly designed game. Like, I think that's what I liked about Celeste so much, is it was just like, short. It had like an endpoint, and it had like harder levels you could do if you wanted to. But it's not like, I didn't finish it and be like, I want more. I was like, oh, that was a good.
But Celeste also had a story.
Yeah, it's true. It did have a story. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a game that fits this example. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of games I feel like that don't necessarily have great stories, or like they have faults that I end up liking regardless, even if the faults like get in the way or something.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion that it feels like enough, and I think it plays specifically to a different sort of interest in games that's not necessarily like met by like AAA games or indie games in general, which is that it's like you're just playing for play's sake. There's no like you don't play Into the Breach because you're like, you don't like sit down and be like, oh yeah, where was I at the story and like who was doing what and like holding this whole like complex narrative in your head. You just like sit down to like fucking kill some alien monsters, and sometimes that feels really good. And like, I think specifically with a roguelite, it really helps in terms of like, especially my time commitment that I can give to games right now, where it's like, oh man, I want to sit down and play something before I like sit down to work. It's like I can get a satisfying round of like 20 minutes of gameplay in with Into the Breach and like feel good about what I did and not like boot up Nier Automata and have to like go through menus for 5 minutes to figure out like what I was doing, and then I run across a map for, you know, 10 minutes, then I have to stop playing. You're just like in and out. I think what they do run the risk of is that, like, if you don't have any sort of like good reason to go back to the game, it's very easy to play it once and feel like you did it.
Mm-hmm.
This was an issue I had with Invisible Ink by Clay, which was like super fun. It was really great to play. I really enjoyed playing it, but like each run felt like a long enough time where like I played through it once and I was like, that was fun, and like the mechanics were cool, but I don't feel compelled to play but do that exact same thing like 15 more times just to unlock a new character. Like, it's not like that's like another level of commitment. So it feels like sometimes these games like bake in like this crazy fervor or this projected or anticipated fervor about their mechanics to be like, oh yeah, you're like, you want to play this like 20 more times because like you really care about other crazy mechs you can get, right? And sometimes you're like, no, not really. Like, I played through it once and it feels really good, and like that's enough for me. I think Into the Breach is different. I definitely anticipate playing it more, especially because of this like chess-like thing where you can rely on positioning almost as much as you can rely on doing actual damage. But I think, I mean, the problem still persists where like you could play Into the Breach like 2 or 3 times and be like, yeah, I see what's going on here.
That's happening with shit ton of games, actually. Like, it just feels like once you've done it, you get it, you know. Like, I think I've bounced off a lot of tactics games for that reason specifically. I think Necrodancer was one of those games for me where I was like,
oh yeah, I bounced off that too.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is like really cool, this is really fun, and then like I died, like, you know, I got like a few levels in and died as is supposed to happen because stuff scales at like such an absurd rate in that game. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, I don't know if I feel like playing. I feel like I got what there is to get, you know?
Yeah, it's like, do you want to do that 30 more times because it's yeah, the best exactly. game you ever played? And you're like, not like maybe you'll do it a few more times, but not enough to like get all the shit.
Yeah.
I just don't think I like roguelikes. I feel like I've realized this in the past few years. Like, I really I think the only one I've really loved was Downwell. Like, that game really clicked with me. I still play that game like on a regular basis on my phone, because like the only phone game I have that doesn't require an internet connection, so I just end up playing it. But that game's really great, and I feel like it's one of the few roguelikes that I feel like as I've actively gotten better at it, I get like really into it, and I don't know, like that game's always fun. Whereas I feel like with things like, I'm trying to think of like other roguelikes, like Nuclear Throne, I feel like it's probably a decent example of like, I played that for a few hours and I feel like I got all I wanted out of it. Like, nothing really is pulling me back to that game. I don't know. I feel like I just like design levels, and I feel like there's something that you feel like with roguelikes and like procedurally generated stuff, like you like feel that it's not, I don't know, like personally designed. Like there's something off about the level of design in a lot of these games. I think Spelunky is probably like the counterpoint to that, whereas like that game does feel very authentic and whatnot. But I don't know, like there's just something off about it, and I've always preferred, I guess, authored content in a way, if that makes sense. That like procedurally generated stuff isn't good or like is lacking. Like there are definitely examples of like great procedurally generated roguelike type stuff, but
yeah,
there's also,
I think that's what
Spelunky
did well too, is that like it felt authored.
Like, it felt, yeah, in that game, like, you could go back to that a million times and you feel like you're getting a fresh experience every time. And that's why that game's so, like, beloved, because it did that so fucking well.
Yeah, I think it's like you have to have this idea of, like, discovery in your game and something that's new and novel that you can, that's not, like, forced on you, but it's something that it brings you back because you're like, oh, man, like, what if I would have done this? You know, what if I, like, would have taken the gun, I could have got past this thing, got to this next room. I don't think Into the Breach really has that. It's kind of like you die and you're like, oh man, wish I could have got to the end. Yeah. So I think that's probably one thing that like is missing. I think, and honestly, I can, there's a kind of a pattern here, which is a lot like, this is what Into the Breach and Invisible Ink have in common, which is like, any given like map is very similar. Like there's different sort of like environmental stuff, but it's not like they're introducing kind of like big tilt factors to make the game feel super different. Whereas I feel like in Spelunky, it's like, oh man, all the floor is slippery. This changes how I interact with the game. And it's different enough from the previous level that it makes me also anticipate that something that happens in the next level will be really cool too. Like Into the Breach is like, you can play the first level and get like a pretty okay sense of how everything goes throughout the rest of the game. I think that like kind of having that instant knowingness of possibility, if it's not like questioned, is what makes you kind of burn out on these things. Cause you're like, oh, like nothing's going to happen here that shakes it up so much that makes me interested to continue playing inside of this space. One more thing I want to talk about, but while I'm on my little like game rant, is do a little mobile corner discussion about some like dope mobile stuff that's come out. I know we got a lot of listeners that really care about the bad end consensus around dope mobile games. So I'm going to do a little
rundown.
I've honestly
been looking for more. I'm still playing Balls. I'm so glad
you guys have tuned into this episode of Bad End, because guess what? I got a list of like four games.
Let's go.
Game number one, Florence.
Oh, that's a good game. I did play
It's a mobile game by Annapurna Interactive. Annapurna published it. The team, I can't remember what their name was. It's kind of like a small little narrative thing. It's fun. It's more like an interactive experience. It's not like a game to play on the pot, you know? But it's definitely a...
I mean, you can, but you might get
You can play
sad.
It on the pot. It's super true. I have a little cry on the pot. Mm-hmm. All right, next up, it's totally different from Florence, is a new game by Michael Bro, who was famous for... this like 868 Hack... shit, what are those other games that he did? He's like kind of this like game designer guy who makes like very gamey games that are really interesting and weird. This one is called Cinco Paus. It's like Cinco, like five, and then P-A-U-S. I think it's actually in Portuguese. It's like his other games that he made, but weird. You've got these like five wands, so you're trying to get through a level. It's actually a roguelike. And each wand has different abilities that are like kind of obtuse and you have to discover them. That's kind of fun. Meteor Fall, I talked about earlier on the podcast. It actually sounds super similar to Slay the Spire. The art's super good. It looks like Tiny Touch Tales meets Adventures type stuff. Oh, sorry, meets Adventure Time type stuff. And it's about kind of like dungeon crawling and deck building, with single people. This is a hot game that I'm sure you guys have been playing, Alto's Odyssey, which is a sequel to Alto's Adventure, which came out like two years ago.
Is that out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's out.
It's out loud and in charge.
It's so vibey, man.
Pick that up.
It's got
vibes. This was like my go-to Subway game for a long time.
Yeah,
but
shit.
It's very similar to the first one. Like,
oh yeah. It's like almost to the point. I mean, there's like, they do some stuff to mix it up. It's kind of more. I mean, it's got Odyssey in the name, you know.
Same with more. Is same the year for the more. Odyssey. Yeah.
It's an Odyssey this time. I do. Yeah. That was a good game. Their first one. So. Yeah,
all right. Next up, HAL Laboratories of Nintendo fame recently published Part-Time UFO, which is this like just some fucking mobile game where you control a little UFO and you like pick up boxes and stuff and you kind of take jobs. This. It's kind of cute. And then I actually just downloaded, this has been out for a while, but I don't know why I didn't download it, but the new game by the team that made Neko Atsume, Hit Point, they made a new game, which I don't know what it's called because it's in Japanese, but if you search Neko Atsume and find the original one and go to their studio name on the App Store, you can find this game. It's about a frog who goes on adventures and you like pack bags for him and then he like goes out in the world and he sends you pictures of himself.
It's so cute.
It's super cute.
I have no idea what's going on in it because I don't speak Japanese, which is
yeah.
Like,
I'm kind of just like you press the button on the left to say okay.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Is what it's called.
But yeah, that game is. I'm hoping they localize it eventually.
It doesn't seem to have that same like super crazy American appeal, but
it's just weird. It's such a weird little thing.
It's so weird. I mean, I love it. It's like so fucking weird. You play the game less than you play Neko Atsume because you're just like, you give this thing, you give this guy like stuff and he goes out in the world and he sends you pictures. You don't ever actually like interact with him.
Yeah. It's barely a game, honestly.
It's
like,
barely a game. It's like if Gone Home, it's like makes Gone Home look like Call of Duty. It's so not a game.
Nice. And I've also still been playing Love Nikki Dress Up Queen, the greatest mobile game ever made. I play it every night. Before
I tried
I
playing
asleep.
It. I couldn't get it.
Every morning when I wake up.
My God.
I'm an expert. I'm in the it's top 11% of the world of style sense.
Wow. Congrats.
I didn't realize we were in such presence. Good.
I mean, it's just for this 1 week on this like style challenge, but it feels really good. I've never been that
She's
hype.
She's a hype beast.
I'm fucking doing it. I feel like a hype beast. I was like, damn, I'm gonna start a blog of my
Love Nikki
looks.
Hype beast.
I would totally read a Love Nikki like fashion blog.
Yeah, I'm starting it.
Do it.
You should. That should be your new
column. Should be my new project. Yeah.
Your new beat.
Mm-hmm. My new hobby. All
right. I think we're super late, let's just wrap it up. This is Bad End Podcast. This was episode number 22. Thanks for listening again. We got some new listeners recently, I feel. So shouts out to everyone who's like just recently listening. People who hopped onto the show recently. Like, love you guys. Love our audience. Keep listening. Share us. Rate us and review us on iTunes. That's very helpful. We are on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. Right?
I think it's Bad End Podcast, yeah.
And yes, Bad End Podcast, and then the Gmail is badendpod@gmail.com. So hit us up there. And then again, rate us and review us on iTunes. We will see you in a couple weeks later.
Or we might not. We don't know what we're going to do because we're all going to be at GDC. So it might be a special ep.
Might be a special
ep. We'll figure it out. But it's going to be lit.
Kyle are just going to post about a party with a microphone and just talk and over.
Interview everybody for
we're
Bad End.
Interview everyone. Be like, what do you think of Bad End Podcast? And then someone will be like, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking
about.
It'll be
Sid Meier being like, what? And be like,
Sid
we got
Meier
it.
Sid Meier at GDC.
What if I just did like voice logs while you guys have like an episode?
It'll be like audio
and then
logs.
I do like voice logs like that'll just intersperse and it's just me like, I'm playing this cool game right now. It's like, it's just like a 2 minute note from me about a new game I'm playing.
Yeah, it'd be like be every cool AAA video game when you're walking.
It'll be Josh trying to sell the Bad End audience on Slay the Spire. guys, listen.
Check it out. Look. No, but send us some ideas. Shoot us some ideas for what you should do for the GDC episode while I'm still in New York and Kyle and Katie are going to both be in freaking the center of the video game world.
Uh huh. Yeah, baby.
Until that happens, we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
See you, everybody.
Peace.